The case of Gordon versus Lizarraga is next, and Mr. Thompson, will you please proceed?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I represent petitioner appellant Angie Gordon in this matter. And before I begin, I wanted to thank the panel and the court staff for giving up their holiday today to making sure that this case got argued and that it moved forward. I really, on behalf of Ms. Gordon, really appreciate that fact. Given the court's focus of questions that it wanted to have considered today, I've narrowed my argument down to those points. The video interview of Jane Doe 1 should have been disclosed by the prosecution to the defense, and trial counsel was ineffective in not acquiring it. The police report that summarizes that video interview is approximately 5 paragraphs in length. The video recording, although not all of it questions and answers, but still you can hear Jane Doe 1 speaking to others in the background at the end of it, is 45 minutes in length. There's not a way in which the police officer could have possibly got all the information that was in the interview and presented it in the report.
Counsel, let me ask you this. I take your point that Gordon was trying to show that this was a consensual intercourse, but and that Ms. Kelsey stated so in the video. But if you look at the statements that she made when counsel cross-examined her about inconsistent statements about the timeline of the rape, and I'm looking at ER 1265 and 1273, that seems to me to be almost exactly the same scenario that played out in the portion of the video interview that you have focused on. Why isn't that cumulative? How can you show that there was prejudice under the circumstances by a failure to disclose the video?
So I think that there are a number of ways in which that plays out. One, the statements themselves that are in the interview are that her first statement is that the sex lasted 5 minutes. Then I told him we had to stop. That precise statement is not presented to the trial court during the trial. The answer later on, the answer of 5 minutes is given to the question. And when you yelled at him to get off of you, how long had you been having sex? And that's at excerpt 58, 10 minutes in and 11 minutes in.
On redirect, the prosecutor asked her if she told him, meaning Gordon, she didn't want to have sex prior to intercourse, and she said yes. And there's other quotations in here. She was asked how long it was. She said she didn't know. There was certainly a lot of discussion before the jury and the presentation and closing about how Ms. Kelsey was, shall I say, truth challenged. Well, she kept varying, going back and forth. Each side pointed this out. And I guess the question I deal with is, even if you satisfy the first two prongs of Brady, I'm struggling with how Mr. Gordon or Ms. Gordon was prejudiced by the withholding of the video, because all of what was said, including that critical first part when you talk about how long before she objected, was contradicted by other direct statements that she made. And indeed, there's a lot in the record in terms of her testimony or Kelsey's testimony that shows that there wasn't anything that could be relied upon. And if the prosecution had played the entire tape, that's highly prejudicial to your client. So how on balance are you prejudiced? How's your client prejudiced?
Well, I looked at the tape several times, obviously, before filing the petition and then and getting prepared for today. And I, as a trial lawyer, and that's what I do as well as appellate stuff, I would have had no problem introducing that tape and would have, in fact, introduced that tape.
Counsel, let me ask you, because I've got, let me ask you what you would have done with this as a trial lawyer. So what you're referring to is at 10 minutes and 4 seconds into the
version we have, at least as the court. It said that the detective asked Kelsey, said, how long did sex last? And Kelsey responded, 5 minutes, and I told him to stop. I think you said that she said 5 minutes, and then I told him to stop. But I don't think that's correct. I think she actually said 5 minutes, and I told him to stop. So then at 10:27, so only 20-ish seconds later, the detective asked, because obviously the detective's wondering what, and said, when intercourse began, or, you know, when, and a very descriptive thing happened, explains it, when that all began, did you tell him anything at that point? And Kelsey responded, I told him to stop. And as I recall, because I watched this video too, you know, it's a very, as you may recall, it's a very slow interview, right? Because she's obviously, you know, not doing great. And so 20 seconds later, I mean, that's basically back to back. I mean, the detective asked a question, got an ambiguous answer, I think. And then when asked a follow-up question in the interview, she specifically said she told him to stop. And then 1 minute later, which again, isn't that long, because, you know, if you watch this video, you sit there waiting a long time between questions, you know, it says, when you yelled at him to get off, how long had you had sex? And then Kelsey said 5 minutes. So, you know, the detective says, for those 5 minutes, were you consensual to the sex? And Kelsey says, no, I didn't want it at all. And then the detective said, so 5 minutes in, you told him to get off? And then Kelsey repeated, no, I was yelling the whole time. He didn't get off the whole time. So let me ask you, what would you have done with that? I mean, you would have tried to introduce those. I understand those little statements, not in context, help you. But the prosecution would have shown the whole video.
Well, the testimony that she provided was damaging in and of itself. So what you were looking for was stuff that you could use to impeach. And the court, when I made the statement about her answer of 5 minutes to the question, and when you yelled at him to get off of you, how long had you been having sex? They came at 11 minutes and 15 seconds in. So it was after the 10 minute and 5 or 10 minute and 4 seconds.
Yeah, it's a minute and a half later. But I mean, when I look at that video, I mean, it's a very slow interview.
Yes, it is. But the 2 points about at first, when she talks about it as we had sex for 5 minutes, and then I told him to get off. And then we had sex for 5 minutes before I said stop.
So, counsel, let me make sure I'm clear about this, because my clerk wrote 5 minutes and I told him to stop. And you're saying 5 minutes and then I told him to stop. That seems to make a little bit of a difference. Is the then in there or not?
I don't have the excerpt with me, but I will look when I'm sitting down to get the exact quote. I have it written out like that, so I'm going to say yes, but I have a statement that sex lasted 5 minutes, then I told him we had to stop.
But at the end of the day, it seems like Judge Van Dyke and I are both struggling with the same issue. You've got testimony that from Ms. Kelsey's own lips is completely inconsistent, both within the tape and outside the tape. So as you know, if evidence is cumulative, it's very difficult to show that it's prejudicial, even under Brady. How do you overcome that problem?
Right. So going back to that question and your earlier question, Your Honor, the suppression of the recording was prejudicial because the court had concern about JD1's credibility from the beginning. The court said, do I think Mr. Learnhardt, the trial counsel, Kelsey is capable of lying and has lied in the past? Sure I do. And that's at excerpt 72, 1083. The court then said, would I necessarily have come to that conclusion, finding Gordon guilty, if JD1 was the only witness and there was nothing else happening? I doubt it. So the fact that the court had questions about her credibility, anything that would have added to that lack of credibility would not have been cumulative, but would have been more evidence, additional evidence, to make the determination that she was not credible and that the sex was consensual, not forced, as she had testified.
Well, I think one other thing you ought to deal with in terms of what the court said, the court was clear that it didn't think that the result would have changed if the tape had been in based upon the evidence presented. The court didn't think that any change would have occurred. And as you know, that's the standard, particularly under AEDPA. You've got to show that the result would have been different. And that's what I struggle with. I'd really, and quoting Kyle here, it says, you've got to have evidence that undermined confidence in the outcome of the trial. And the judge, from my reading, was saying this wouldn't have changed anything. How do you overcome that?
The state court was unreasonable in denying the Brady claim. The court found that consent or mistaken consent was thoroughly explored by the defense and was raised as defense, and therefore the court had awareness and ability to evaluate that issue. Okay, that's what the court said. But really, in truth, counsel was not able to thoroughly explore the consent because he was not aware of JD1's statements about kissing Gordon at the beginning, and that she was kissing him on the lips, and that they were being French kissing. So that was not part of it. He was not aware of JD1's statements that she said nothing to Gordon when he took her clothes off, which is in the interview, but not in the police report. He was not aware of JD1's statements that the sex went on for 5 minutes before she objected. That wasn't in the trial testimony. That wasn't in the report.
But wait a minute. What about what both Judge Van Dyke and I have said, that indeed it was in other testimony? How do you say that that wasn't in the evidence?
Well, it wasn't brought out that she had told the officer that on the night of the event, that in fact it had been consensual for that 5 minute time period. I'm not aware of her testifying as to that.
Well, I guess what I'm struggling with is that at various points in the trial, it seems to me that evidence came in that at one point she told him from the beginning that she did not want sex. At other points, she said she didn't say anything. So you've got contradictory evidence here. The tape confirms that. And so the question is, why is this not cumulative? If there were a black and white issue where it was very clear that only in the tape was there exculpatory evidence, then I would get your point about the Brady prejudice. But it seems like there is significant other evidence that says just the opposite, that she provided in other parts of the trial. Isn't that correct?
Well, I am not aware that she provided that evidence in other parts of the trial. I mean, it was her testimony that counsel cross-examined. And that,
well, I thought I just read this to you, but I'll do it again. Indeed, I don't know. I suppose it could have been you. Were you the trial counsel?
No, I was not.
Okay. You're a good lawyer, so I imagine you wouldn't have done this. Anyway, apparently in the cross-examination by Gordon's counsel about inconsistent statements about the timeline of the rape, at one point in the testimony, counsel asked Kelsey if she remembered how long it was after intercourse that she began to tell Gordon to stop, and she didn't know, in quotes, how long it was, the implication being that she did not say it immediately. The prosecutor clarified on redirect, asking her if she had told him she, in quotes, didn't want to have sex prior to the intercourse, and she said yes. So here you have a direct contrary evidence to what was on the tape, right?
No, but what counsel could have done and should have done is said, isn't it true that in your interview that you had with Detective Alaya on the night that it occurred, that you said that you had sex for 5 minutes before you said to stop? That's different.
Counsel, if they had done that, then she said, no, I didn't say that. I was saying, and to the extent it was unclear, that was all clarified. That's the problem I have with it. You're making this like it was more clear than it was. And then I went and watched the video and I was like, well, I'm not even sure she even said that. But if she did, she certainly clarified it. She certainly, the detective asked follow-up questions and clarified it.
Right. And those follow-up questions come in the form really of a cross-examination. They're not the open-ended, which was how the interview started. And when she said those things,
it's only a minute later, and in that, you know, that would be about 20 seconds in this sort of fast-paced conversation we're having. So it's really not
it doesn't, at least it doesn't strike me when I watch that video that, you know, that the detective's bad. And the detective is genuinely investigating at that point, saying, now, wait a minute. Are you saying that you had consensual sex for 5 minutes? And she's like, no, I was protesting the whole time. And I'm not sure it would have been that helpful to you. It's very hard for me to see how it's prejudicial.
I understand. But she does not say that, no, I was doing it, saying it the whole time until after the question is asked by the detective of, so what you're saying is that you consented to the sex, or I can't remember the exact phrasing. And then she said, perhaps picking up on her cue, going, no, I said it all along. But the judge did not have in front of him those statements of hers.
Okay, counsel, so the question that was asked by the detective that where the answer was given that you are really relying on was, how long did this sex last? Okay, so she was answering that question and she says 5 minutes. And I told him to stop. You say that she said, and then I told him to stop, but I told him to stop. And so that she's answering the question of, she wasn't saying at that point, she wasn't asking, was it consensual? She's saying, how long was it? And this young woman was clearly kind of out of it in this interview. It's obvious if you watch it. And so then the detective follows up and says, wait a minute, when was the, and it's all within a minute or so, minute and a half. It's just hard for me to see how that's the silver bullet that you're saying it is.
Well, it's not. It's one of 11 statements that were provided. The probation, the truancy, the drug use, the not getting along with the parents, which is what trial counsel argued is the reason that she lied. Those other things are all part of it. It's not just one thing. This is probably, you know, if you want to say the larger thing, but it's not just one thing. Another example, and I'll give this real quick. In trial, she testifies that she is driven to the apartment. She is then impeached, although not effectively, by trial counsel, which allows her, by using the preliminary examination, to say, well, then you said that you walked for 45 minutes. He kind of backs her out of it and excuses her by saying, well, you must have been under stress because you were getting cross-examined. You were testifying. It was a nervous situation, et cetera. And she goes, yes, that's why I didn't say it back then. Well, had he listened to the first couple of lines of this video recording, she says adamantly, I walked to the apartment. It took me 45 minutes to get there. He could have impeached her with that statement, which was closer in time and was not under this, as she used, ruse of not being able to tell the truth.
All right, Mr. Thompson, Mr. Thompson, let me jump in on that.
Yeah.
I get the point that it's potentially impeachment. I find her more to be a poor narrator of facts unless she's probed by counsel or the detective. But even if I give you the point that it's contradictory, as Judge Smith points out, there's a lot of evidence in there that's contradictory that the court found her to be sometimes not credible. And your response was, it's still not cumulative. At what point does it become cumulative, or you're saying it never becomes cumulative, even though there's 100 instances of her testifying contradictorily?
Well, the point, the 11 statements that I'm talking about are not cumulative of the other matters that are brought in because they're not discussed during the testimony. So they're not cumulative in that sense. Do they go to her overall credibility and therefore they're cumulative of the fact she doesn't have good credibility? Or are they more instances of the facts that would have allowed the trial judge who heard the testimony and made the decision to make the determination that she is not credible?
So if she's not credible,
it's a consent defense. And therefore, those charges go out and a whole lot of sentence goes out of this case.
So your point is, if there's 11 instances of lack of credibility, a 12th is going to change it, or a 13th or a 14th at some point. Is there ever a time where it becomes cumulative?
But the trier of fact should have the benefit of knowing all of the information. The officer went through the time to take it down. It was recorded. It was booked into evidence. Prosecutor should have turned it over. Trial counsel should have acquired it. It was other sources of impeachment that would have added to, not cumulatively, but added to the fact that she was not a credible witness, not a credible victim, and therefore those charges would not have been.
I think Judge Smith's about ready to get you to save some of your time, but I do have a question, Judge Smith, I'd like to ask him
before
we go to the government, because I want to know the government's got it. I think I heard you say, and I thought I remember this in your briefs, that the that the kissing the petitioner and performing oral sex on petitioner were things that were in the interview, but were not in the detective report, and therefore, but I thought that in the report that it does talk about how she wanted to kiss the petitioner and that she performed oral sex on petitioner. So is it or is it not in the detective's report? In other words, what you had, or is it only in the video?
I believe it's not in there. I believe there's kissing on the cheek, and then there may have been kissing, but there wasn't the extent of the kissing and the back and forth, and that she engaged in it. She's the one that initiated it, and then it moved from the kissing standing up or on the chair, depending on which version you've got, to kissing onto the bed, in which the 5 minutes of sex.
So to be clear, the kissing is in the report, but kind of consistent with a lot of the stuff, not the detail that was in the video.
Right. And it may be alluded to. But then again, that's why you want to bring in.
No, I hear you. So I'm more of like a factual question. Then on the oral sex, is that in the report or is it only in the video?
I don't recall it as being in the report. I will look when I sit down here.
We can ask the government's counsel. Thank you.
Very well. You're over your time. We're going to give you a little bit of rebuttal after we hear from the government. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Swanson, here we go. Please proceed for the government.
Good morning. May it please the court, Michelle Swanson for respondent appellee. As the court notes, the AEDPA standard of review applies to the Brady and ineffective assistance of counsel claims that we're discussing today. Appellant contends that the videotape shows that the victim stated that she did not object to having sex with appellant for over 5 minutes until she finally objected. And I have also watched the videotape twice before this oral argument and listened very closely and took notes. And nowhere on that videotape did she say that she did not object for over 5 minutes. In fact, she made it quite clear repeatedly to Detective Elliott that she objected from the outset at the time of penetration, that she told petitioner appellant that she did not want to have sex, and that she yelled and pushed at him the entire time while appellant continued to have sex with her. So I don't see that statement anywhere on the videotape. But let's assume that she had made that statement. The state court found that that would not have made any difference to her credibility. As the court notes, defense counsel cross-examined her extensively about many of the inconsistencies in her statements regarding the rape, and also cross-examined her about her intoxication and how that affected her ability to perceive throughout the rape. So that was thoroughly explored, and this assumed statement that she made she made quite clear later in her interview was not the case, would have made no difference to her overall credibility.
Counsel, can you give us specific record sites that in your judgment are the best evidence that evidence outside the video was cumulative on the issue of her consent to the sex? What would you cite?
Well, Detective Elia's report actually faithfully memorializes the victim's statement. And Detective Elia's report is in the appellate record at volume 3 of the excerpts of record at 552 to 553. To answer the question earlier about whether that report mentions that the victim initiated kissing and that appellant took her clothes off before the intercourse, that's all memorialized in the report. So I would say that is all right there, and there's no dispute in this case that defense counsel did receive that report.
And you believe that evidence is cumulative of what would be found in the video?
I do, Your Honor.
One thing that's not, let me follow up on one thing that I don't quite agree is in there is that she doesn't mention that she told the defendant she did not want to have sex because she was a virgin. She answered upon questioning that she at the interview that she was a virgin, but she doesn't say, I told the defendant that or objected because of that. Doesn't the failure to turn over the video deprive the defense of the opportunity to attack the already shaky credibility on that point?
No, it does not. You know, in both her video, in both the statement that she gave Detective Elliott and her trial testimony, she was quite clear that she did object at the time of penetration and that she objected throughout the course of the rape. So let's say that they had introduced evidence that she had said that she had not told Detective Elliott that on the tape say that had been disclosed and they had used that to impeach her. It would have made no difference because it was quite clear from both her statement to Detective Elliott and her trial testimony that at some point at penetration and thereafter it became non-consensual. So that would have made no difference to the trial court's verdict in this case.
It wouldn't have assisted the defense counsel in impeaching her further.
Again, it's just cumulative. I mean, she was thoroughly impeached. The trial court recognized that there were problems with her credibility, that she had lied in the past and that she was capable of lying. But the trial court also found that appellant was completely unworthy of belief. And the trial court also found very persuasive all of the other evidence submitted in the case that corroborated the victim's testimony. And that testimony consists of her behavior immediately after leaving appellant's apartment. She was distraught. She immediately disclosed the rape to her grandparents. When they did not believe her, she desperately opened the car door of a moving car, stuck out her legs, and tried to flag down a passing police officer. When he saw her, she was crying hysterically, and she immediately disclosed the rape to him. Her behavior was entirely consistent with someone who had just been raped. Second of all, the sexual assault examination revealed that she had 2 abrasions to her hymen that was consistent with blunt force trauma. And third, appellant's prior sexual assaults on the victim and his girlfriends was further evidence that the victim was telling the truth in this case. And as I just noted, you know, the trial court found appellant completely unbelievable and specifically said that when appellant starts spinning his tall tales, unquote, he is, quote, his own worst enemy. On this record, we would submit that the state court reasonably found that the failure to disclose the videotape did not result in any prejudice and was therefore not material.
Counsel, your worthy opponent, of course, says this is a Brady violation, and we've talked about the cumulative nature of some of this evidence. Considering all of this through the light of AEDPA, can you comment on how you believe, what's the strongest evidence that the counsel for Mr. Gordon has to pierce, if you will, the AEDPA veil? How can they succeed on that?
I don't see how he can. He's arguing essentially that he just disagrees with the Superior Court's determination there was no prejudice, and he offers alternative arguments and his views of how that evidence should be viewed. But that's not the standard. The standard isn't even whether the Superior Court was incorrect. It's whether it was objectively unreasonable. And appellant has not met that burden, especially in the context of the ineffectiveness claim in which there's double deferential review under AEDPA.
And I gather when you get to the IAC claim, I assume that your position would be that you believe there was no Brady violation in terms of the third prong anyway. So, that, of course, by definition, there was no IAC claim, at least with respect to the Brady allegation. Is that correct?
That's correct. And this court has said that those two standards are equivalent.
Say that again, counsel. That you mean the Strickland standard and what other standard?
And the materiality standard under Brady. Okay, both prejudice.
So basically, if we conclude that basically if you decide this on prejudice on Brady, then under Strickland's prejudice, you would fail also. Is that right?
That's correct. Okay.
Well, would you even get there? Wouldn't you find that there had been no, if you will, failure to comply with the reasonable standard of attorney conduct if there was no violation found?
Well, the state court just went straight to the prejudice prong. So that's why we're just discussing that today.
So, counsel, can I ask you I think it's similar question to what Judge Smith was asking you, but maybe just slightly different. And that is, it seems to me that Gordon's counsel is arguing in response to the cumulative. He's basically saying, I'm sure I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think he's saying that he's disputing that it's cumulative because this is so important. In other words, it's hard to argue that a lot of the stuff that is in the video wasn't in the report and therefore sort of cumulative. But at some point, you could imagine that something would be cumulative in a sense that the evidence would be about the same thing as what there was already evidence in the record. But this evidence was just so, even though it's quote unquote cumulative, it's just so much better. I think that's what Gordon's counsel is saying. This is so much better and so much more useful than the other evidence that they had, that it makes a difference. And I'm trying to think of how does that work in the cumulative analysis? Is it just that if it's cumulative, you're done, it's a really, really hard showing, or does the strength of the evidence matter? I'm not necessarily saying it is strong evidence, it is stronger. I'm not necessarily agreeing or disagreeing with that, but I'm just saying, I'm trying to get an idea of how we should look at his argument that his response to our concern that it might be cumulative.
Well, in terms of the victim's credibility, you know, that is the standard in terms of was her credibility impeached by other inconsistent statements, and was the trial court aware of this? And yes, I would say absolutely. The defense counsel impeached her repeatedly with many inconsistent statements, and again, also highlighted.
Did he mention really the kissing? Because it sounds like the kissing was in the report that they had, and so did defense counsel try to use the initiation of kissing as to impeach?
I don't remember that specific question, but what his tactic was he concentrated on when she later objected during the rape, and he questioned her extensively about how drunk she was and got her to admit that she was kind of going in and out of consciousness and was fuzzy, and got her to admit, yeah, maybe I don't quite remember what was said or when I said it. He chose to do that tactic. In fact, the prosecutor realized and recognized what he was doing. And during Officer Davis's testimony, the prosecutor specifically mentioned, and I apologize, I don't have that specific citation in front of me, but actually said that he recognized that that's what defense counsel was trying to do, that he was trying to make it appear that the victim had only objected after intercourse had been going on for quite some time. And that's why he wanted to offer Officer Davis's testimony to rehabilitate her, which the trial court allowed. And then my other point would be that
your point is that the argument was the focus was by defense counsel was more that not so much that she had initiated everything, but or maybe you're not sure about that, but you do recall that the focus was on the fact that she didn't object for until well into it.
That's correct. And again, as I said previously, there was no disputing that she objected at some point and that appellant continued having sex with her. So it is clear that it came non-consensual at some point. And so whatever had happened before they even started sex really would have made no difference whatsoever to the trial.
Can I ask you about that? Does it, in a sense, if he had, a, if she had objected, I don't necessarily see it in the record, but if it was more clear and a jury could conclude that she had not objected until 5 minutes in, does that make a difference in the sense of him being able to be convicted?
No, because she testified she did object clearly. She said she's yelled at him to stop, to get off of her. She pushed him and he continued having sex with her.
She testified to that at the trial?
Yes, okay. That's correct.
Can I follow up on or dovetail off of what Judge Van Dyke was mentioning earlier in his question? That was, you know, the value of this video. We've got a 45-minute video of the victim on the night in question, fresh, and video obviously has a better trial presence than cross-exam. And backing off to maybe the 30,000-foot level, defense counsel, is always concerned that when a court suppresses or rules, if we do, that this was okay, we're sort of empowering the police, we're empowering the government to withhold evidence, in a sense rewarding them here by affirming a conviction despite the fact that it didn't turn over this evidence that they had right on point victim that night. Address that concern from a global standpoint. Aren't we rewarding the government for withholding evidence that arguably was relevant?
Well, first of all, I would like to note that the prosecutor made clear during the hearing on this claim in the Superior Court that the trial court had made no finding that the prosecution did not actually turn the videotape over, and the trial court agreed that he had not actually made that finding. They were going to go ahead and assume that for the sake of the argument. I just wanted to make that clear. Second of all, the prosecution did turn over the police report of Detective Elia. And in her report, she specifically notes that the interview was recorded, and she specifically notes where the DVD was logged into evidence. And defense counsel made a follow-up Brady request and requested several DVDs. Not this one in particular, but another one of a videotaped interview of the victim that she did later when her mother was with her. And during the in limine discussion about the Brady material, defense counsel mentioned that he had received most of the DVDs except two or three. It's unclear from that whether he received it or not. But I just wanted to note those things in the record, because this is not a case where prosecution was, you know, trying to hide it, that they did hide it. I mean, they put it out there that it was there. Maybe it wasn't turned over. I think that was probably just an oversight by the prosecutor and defense counsel. But I think in this case, this is not one of those where there was some kind of deception by
the counsel. Let me be sure I understood you correctly. Did you say that this video, along with others, was listed among the evidence available, that defense counsel asked for some videos but not this one? Is that correct?
That's correct.
So basically, from a Brady perspective, it was not hidden to the degree that it was listed among the evidence available. It just wasn't requested. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Why isn't that an IAD claim then? IAC, I'm sorry.
Well, we did, and that is part of what we have addressed here today, that the fact that counsel didn't seek that DVD and that the fact that it wasn't introduced was that ineffectiveness. And again, for the same reasons, the state court found that even if counsel had requested it and entered it into evidence, it would have made no difference to the victim's credibility or to the verdict.
So the prejudice thing, this is where the prejudice inquiry would basically be the same, whether you get to it. Yeah. Can I ask you one other? So could the video have been used by the prosecution if it had wanted to? Like, I realize it would have been a problem that the prosecution had not turned it over and then tried to use it. That might have been a problem. But if the video had been turned over and defense counsel had looked at the entire video and said, "Wow, this is on balance, this is not helpful. So I'm not going to use it." But could prosecution, or does prosecution need to use her as a witness if she's available and not the video?
That's correct. Only if they had been able to use that to impeach her or else to rehabilitate her.
So the prosecution would have been barred from using just saying we want to play this as evidence because we think it's helpful to them.
Right, right. They have to use the victim's testimony in that case.
Because a confrontation clause?
Yes. I guess. I don't know. You've got me off guard with that.
No, I don't know.
I'm just wondering why, I mean, because it's just not super clear to me that this video actually helps the defendant, right? It seems to me like on balance, this video, I mean, the only way I think it would help the defendant is if you just were able to clip out those little statements, what I would consider out of context. So it seems to me that, you know, I wasn't ever a prosecutor, but it seems to me that I might want to actually play this video as a prosecutor, but I don't know if the prosecutor could have.
Well, and then, I mean, you know, if defense counsel hadn't had this video and they tried to, whatever portion they believe that the victim said she didn't object for 5 minutes, and they would have just tried to play that little bit, of course, the prosecutor could have then entered the rest of the video to rehabilitate and show that, in fact, she made it quite clear that she did object strenuously from the outset of sex. So, yeah, they could have used it in that case. Unless there are any more questions, I'm prepared to submit the matter.
Very well. Other colleague have additional questions of Ms. Swanson? All right. Mr. Thompson, we're going to give you a couple of minutes for rebuttal, and I'd like you to start off by addressing the point made by Ms. Swanson that this video was actually listed among the evidence available. It just wasn't sought by the defense. Would you address that, please?
Yes, Your Honor. It's in the report. It says the interview was recorded on a DVD and later booked into Napa PD evidence DE-12. And counsel did not request it. So that's the IAC part. But regardless,
But it was there. It was disclosed in the sense that it was listed among the evidence available.
Yes, but it was not, the interview itself was not turned over.
Well, now, it was there. Okay, and they could ask for it.
Yeah, but he did ask for with a general discovery letter, and he did include a cite to Brady. So in that sense, he would have turnover, but you don't have to request Brady. That's not a requirement. Brady is due. They're supposed to turn it over. That's the rule of Brady. You don't have to request it. So that part kind of washes out. In any event, counsel, when the state got his declaration, never mentions of having the video, and never mentions requesting the video. And the state got his declaration, not defense counsel.
But so, your objection there is the IAC claim, basically. The evidence was there, prosecution listed it, the counsel didn't ask for it, right?
Well, it's both. It was there, it was listed, prosecution had a duty to turn it over, defense counsel had a duty to see this line and ask for it. So it's prejudice on both sides. Mm. Counsel was in a deficient, and it should have been asked for. Okay. So going back to the statement about the kissing and the oral copulation, Your Honor, I think I misdirected myself during the argument. That part is in the statement about the kissing, the moving to the bed, and the oral copulation. What I was talking about is the full extent of JD1's statement about kissing Gordon on the lips and what is set out in the tape was not used to impeach her during trial. In trial, she testified only that she kissed Gordon on the cheek.
So the question I asked, the government's lawyer, whether or not that was used, your answer is it wasn't. There was no, the defense counsel never said, talked about kissing with her. During that.
As I recall, Your Honor, I was looking through the.
But the interesting thing about that is, I mean, he knew about the kissing from the report. So I guess you're saying, but if he had known the full extent of it, he'd been more likely. It's not clear to me that he would have gone that route. At the end of the day, even if she initiated kissing and did these things, a jury could conclude that, you know, this young woman that she started this stuff, but then didn't want to do it. And you ended up where you were.
But that's more ineffectiveness by counsel by not even asking these questions based upon what was.
Well, my point is that the counsel may have made a strategic decision not to bring up her kissing because thinking that doesn't help his client.
That's not in the declaration that counsel provided the state. And we were not given an evidentiary hearing on this point. So at a minimum, we should have an evidentiary hearing to discuss these matters and to make a determination as to these matters so that we can go forward and we can know what happened. Those are not in.
Well, as I recall, okay, make it understand. As I recall, I remember going through the transcript of the hearing that was in front of the state court judge, I think on this issue. And I actually think kissing and oral sex and those things were talked about, and the fact that they were in the report. And I think some of this was talked about at that hearing.
Well, in the habeas record or in the.
Yeah, in the habeas. In the habeas.
Well, in the habeas record is different because the court did not, when it denied the Brady claim, it denied it in tentative findings. It later then adopted those tentative findings as final findings, but it was in between the tentative findings and the final findings that we finally got the DVD on our request in post-conviction. The court never considered that in making its determination on the habeas issue.
So you, either of my questions, oh, I'm sorry, do you have
I'm trying to make sure, I don't know if it makes any difference, but are you saying, so the part of the record I'm reading, ER 111, et cetera, that area, that hearing, the district court judge had not actually had the district court judge had not looked at, or the habeas judge had not looked at, the state habeas judge had not looked at the video yet?
Well, he did not consider it. He made the tentative findings. He did not change the tentative findings at all. And the discovery of
I'm confused because I know in that hearing with the one I'm looking at, there's discussion about the video. So he certainly considered it. I don't know. But it's fine. I don't want to belabor it.
Okay. Well, then just the last point is I look the statement early on about the then. It's 5 minutes. Then I told him he had to stop. Now, she's mumbling at that time. Maybe it's and instead of then, but I heard then. Then I asked him to stop. But that's at 10:05 in the actual
report. We will end on that happy note. And we thank both counsel for their arguments. Very helpful to us. So we appreciate it. The case of Gordon versus Lisa Raga is submitted. And the court stands adjourned.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
This court for this session stands adjourned.